Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Labor Day has a long history in Canada. It was first declared in 1894 as a federal statutory holiday, but its roots can be traced back to multiple local demonstrations and celebrations decades earlier. Just under one-third of Canadian workers, or 5.3 million people, are represented by a union. Yet this past Labor Day, the commemoration was concentrated to only a few cities like Toronto, Ottawa, Oshawa, Windsor, and Thunder Bay in Ontario. Meanwhile, the amount of unrest between unions and employers is on the rise. Air Canada, Canada Postal Workers, the rail and port strikes recently demonstrate a growing strain. Northumberland Labour Council President Dan Tobin will share his thoughts on the current union actions and his response to attempts to legislate union members back to work. Plus, he will also explain why Labour Day is not such a big deal as it was in the past. See if you agree with him or not. I'm so pleased to have with me today Northumberland Labour Council President Dan Tobin. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thank you, Rob, for having me, and thank you for this time.
Dan, how would you characterize the Labour Day commemoration this year?
Well, Labour Day this year, it was a twofold. I mean, in one way, it's to celebrate what we've accomplished over the past few years. But especially this year, because we've got PharmaCare in. Not sure if it's going to stay, but we got PharmaCare in. We got the anti-scab legislation passed through. On the other hand, and we have to gear up for a fight, because corporations are starting to take advantage of the unions and workers.
What do you mean by that, to take advantage of?
Well, I mean, the offers that we've seen for instance, the flight attendants, the offers were basically, they were lowballing the offers. And with that instance, they were negotiating in one way, and then in another way, they were lobbying to the government, if the union goes on strike, can you mandate them back to work? It just handcuffed the negotiation process.
But when you looked at the coverage for the Labor Day, most people treat this like another long weekend. Like, nobody really pays attention to the parades or the celebrations.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about, I mean, we got the stores are open still. I mean, back when I was growing up, long weekends were meant for family, and stores were closed. And Labor Day was a day that workers would celebrate themselves, all the accomplishments that they've had over the past years. Companies treat it as if it's just another day.
Union leaders talk about the attacks on all workers' rights. Has it ever been any different? I mean, what makes this current environment so unusual in your mind?
In my mind, the government has been attacking more and more because they've been using the Section 107 of the Canadian Labour Code, as well as Section 108 of the Labour Code, who would mandate people back to work. And those two sections, they trample on the charter rights that workers have.
The use of legislative tools to end strikes is nothing new. Unions have consistently complained that they hurt the ability of workers to bargain for better wages and other benefits to improve working conditions. So what's the big deal now?
Right now, the companies are already lobbying to the government, even while they are negotiating with the unions or the workers. If this happens, it kind of handcuffs the negotiation process, and the companies know that.
Can you give us any recent examples of where you've seen that take place?
The most recent example is a flight attendant at the Air Canada. Is that while they were negotiating a contract, the airline was going behind their backs and lobbying to the government, if the union goes on strike, can you order them back to work? And worked, but the flight attendants went on strike, and no more than hours later, government's getting involved and ordering back to work.
You've mentioned a couple times in our conversation already that companies are going behind everybody's back to do this. What evidence do you have?
Well, for this instance, for the flight attendants, it was already, but airline has already admitted to it, as well did the government, that the government fought forward because of their lobbying by the airline, they got involved.
Section 107 of the Canada Labour Code has been used to end labour disputes, as we've just talked about. If the Jobs and Family Minister believes industrial peace and the need to promote favourable conditions to settle industrial disputes and to protect the national economic interests are at stake, she can then, or he can then, step in. Now, we've seen this in the case of the ports. We've seen it with the rail yards. We've seen it with Canada Post. As we've talked about, Air Canada has used this. You've mentioned a bit, but could you dig in a little deeper and say, what makes this so controversial? With so many things at stake, shouldn't the government have a role?
Well, Section 107, which had rarely been used until basically this past summer, and the railroads gotten legislated the rail workers back to work. They got two sections, 107 and 108. 107, which has been rarely used but is being used now, it allows government, like you said, to pass through the legislature without having a vote on it. It can unilaterally just use this section and go ahead and just order them back to work. And in Section 108, which has been used but on the Canada Post, it legislated back to work, the government has to make a motion in the legislature, and it has to be argued and tabled and then passed. But with the flight attendants, 107, government's use of Section 107 to terminate strikes, and it's unacceptable. Government argues that 107 grants it authority or to take nearly any action necessary to secure industrial peace, as you mentioned, including overriding the workers' hard-won charter rights. If the government can use Section 107 to end a strike, what other action does it believe it can take?
Like what?
That's a question I'm...
But what are you imagining is going to happen?
Section 107 has been rarely used for myself. I didn't realize it was in there. I just figured it was all under the one section, back to work legislation, until I heard on the media that 107 is being used. So I looked it up, did some homework on it. If they can unilaterally just end a strike, there's no telling what the government can use that section of the labor code for.
Well, again, I'm unclear as to what that...
Section 107, it takes away their charter rights for workers and takes away the negotiation process that workers have. So what other avenues or what things can the government take away from workers with this section?
Now, the Air Canada workers refused to obey the Canada Industrial Relations Board decision after the government ordered the end to the strike. They've now decided they're going to go to court on this. But in the end, they resolved and an agreement was reached. But now we've seen even more recently that they rejected the newest offer.
They did.
Can you put that into context for us?
Government ordered them back to work. And I think the company misunderstood or misread the support that the unions would have when the government ordered them back to work. The flight attendants defied the order and stayed out on the picket line. I don't think the airline understood the ramifications, the support that the unions would receive.
How have the impact of the U.S. tariffs affected unions? Some describe it as an existential crisis. Is it really?
Companies are having to do things differently because of the tariffs. Companies are rethinking that, and therefore the unions are starting to lose jobs because of the tariffs.
But should unions be asking for wage increases in this kind of environment when we know that our economy is such a precarious position?
Well, but take, for instance, the grocery stores. But we hear the grocery stores are raking in record profits, right? And they're advertising this. And yet, they're not sharing it with their workers. And other companies are raking in record profits. They're only going to share basically just a minuscule amount with their workers. And therefore, but I think in this time, I think the workers have a right to ask for money. Take, for instance, the cost of living. That has skyrocketed over the past few years. And yet wages have been stuck in neutral. But the workers could afford 3 or 4 years ago the same wages they're getting now. No, but they can't afford it now.
But doesn't that kind of logic lead to inflation, especially when the economy is so fragile?
I think that the workers have already given up enough. Take, for instance, the flight attendants. It wasn't that long ago that the airline was going to go bankrupt, and the union stepped in and said, "Hey, we'll do this for you." It took a pay cut years ago to help the airline out. And the airline, in return, promised the flight attendants, when things get better, we will make it better for you. That time has come, and the airline isn't doing it.
We just watched Ontario Premier Doug Ford standing with workers at the Crown Royal Distillery in Kitchener, blasting away at the unfairness of closing a long-time plant. And we know the progressive conservatives are working hard to woo workers and unions. Now, just look at the work being done by our own MPP, David Piccini, who is the Labour Minister. He is constantly networking, and there has been a lot of the government has done that is favourable to working people, including union members. How do you react when you see all these positive things going on in Ontario?
Well, I mean, there is positive things going on, but you also have to look at the things that is going on behind the scenes, is that teachers are being bullied by kids in school and nothing's being done about it. Teachers are having to wear their Kevlar vests in their classrooms. And you got nurses, the patients are actually beating up on nurses, and the government's turning a blind eye to it.
What picture would you paint when it comes to working people in Northumberland County?
Well, I mean, working people in Northumberland County are actually under attack as well. You've seen but a couple of factories have closed down, but I'm not sure of the number of workers has been laid off because of the plant closures. And it's hard to get those jobs back.
Workers are coming to our area who do not live here because it is so expensive and there is no affordable housing. What are you and the Labour Council doing to encourage workforce housing in the county?
We are advocating for the municipality of Northumberland and the town of Cobourg and even Port Hope put affordable housing on a docket and have more affordable housing to start going up, because even we can't afford our own houses now here, because, I mean, take for instance my house. 10 years ago, I could sell it for about $200,000. Now it's worth almost $600,000. That's just a matter of but of a few years. And wages are not going up to compensate for these. Yeah, like you said, there is more people coming in from the city because it's cheaper down here than it is up in the city. You got to advocate towards the building of affordable housing for everybody.
So when you say you've advocated to the county and to Cobourg and Port Hope, what does that mean? What have you done?
I've written letters to the town of Cobourg. I've attended rallies, and our social media presence is advocating for affordable housing.
There are people out there who do not think highly of unions or strikes. What is being done to improve the public's perception of unions? And do you really think you're changing hearts and minds?
You will always have the naysayers. And right now, you're hearing it more and more. Unionized work, for me, has been helpful. I've been able to take my unionized work and turn it into being an advocate for other things. Like my role on the Labor Council is because of my job. Unions give me the ability and workers to get health and safety done in their workplaces, to get a voice of the workers. Yeah, you will always see the naysayers saying that they are corrupt, but I haven't heard of any corruption anywhere yet. But for the naysayers, I will say this. If you show proof to me that unions don't work, I will show you where unions do work.
But Dan, it seems sometimes like when there's these conflicts, governments and businesses use F-35s and unions show up with bows and arrows. What is being done by unions to update their strategies and tactics to meet the 21st century reality of labor relations?
Workers have to go off script, so to speak, and force the companies into negotiating or a contract with them. And sometimes that just is a threat of a strike or a strike vote. They say to postal workers, they're using the right to work, but they won't do any overtime. They will stick to what the collective agreement or the past to the collective agreement states, or they will only go with what their job description states and no more and no less. And it's forcing the companies into the negotiation table.
But going back to where this conversation started, there isn't really a warm embrace of the union movement or labor in our society. And I just wonder out loud, how are you getting your message out to a broader public so that people respect unions more, or that they see the value of strikes, or that there are other job actions or other methods that could be used to bring about settlements rather than this confrontational stuff that we watch unfold each time a union takes on an employer?
Oh, it's a fine line that the workers have to walk in terms of trying to get their employer to negotiate a contract. Sometimes we will need to push the boundary and go on strike. In terms of the airline, I mean, the flight attendants, it worked because he had the support of the public behind him. And I think that it sold a lot of people. Unions, if they stick together, they can accomplish what they are setting out to ask for. And sometimes, if you don't have their support, I mean, you don't even need support. Sometimes a strike will hinder the process as well. But you have to walk a fine line, and the union's got to know, is it the right time or to go out?
Dan Tobin, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
And thank you very much, Rob.
That was Northumberland Labor Council President Dan Tobin. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.